talking to you about today is lawful interception, and specifically how it relates to the European context. That's why you have my lawful interception poster boys. We have Adam Shoshak and Bram, what's his last name? Cohen, on the left. Okay, so first I'm going to go over what exactly we mean by lawful interception, and then, you know, specifically how it relates to internet services, how it started out in the EU, what kind of legislation there is, you know, the boring stuff that makes it happen in the first place, the Telecommunications Standard Institute, how they're standardizing interception between different ISPs and the operators and governments, and then interception suppliers, who's making this stuff? How much are they making it for, and who are they selling it to? How does it work? And then finally, what are some future developments? What are the issues, problems, etc.? Okay, so ETSI defines lawful interception as basically an action that is done by the operator, yeah, on their own network to make available certain information to a law enforcement facility. So the theoretical way that ETSI defines it is that you get a warrant for a particular type of information based on a crime for a specific individual. And then you take that warrant and it goes to the network operator. Here we go. Network operator, and then they're supposed to deliver that information to a separate facility from the government. Okay, so why do we intercept? There are pretty obvious reasons why we intercept, I guess, but these are the more popular ones. You know, big bad terrorism, pedophilia, because no one likes that, cyber stalking, data theft, you know, drug dealers, these are pretty standard. And why shouldn't you? Well, there are a lot of privacy concerns, that privacy is sometimes summarily dismissed when looking for your bad guys. And security, because a lawful interception system that's put on a production network and that's intimately integrated into that network could be a weak point. Before I show you this slide, I'm going to show you a video. First of all, I have some things to tell you about this video before you get to see it so you can kind of appreciate it. Normally, only if you were a government entity, like a three-letter agency, could you see the video I'm about to show you now. It's never been shown to such an audience before, and it's pretty marketingly blah blah, but it shows you what this guy's in the three-letter agencies gets to see. So, if you wanted to turn off the video anytime, no, you don't have to do it, I'm just kidding, but, all right, let's go. Is that hurting anyone's ears?
Today, law enforcement agencies and security organizations find themselves facing an ever-growing variety of challenges and threats to security. Some of them are traditional ones, such as handling drug trafficking, internal security, fighting organized crime, and of course, terrorism. Proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. Secrecy and covert actions are your targets' middle names. They operate both locally and worldwide, trying to inflict as much damage as possible. In order to remain undetected, they use a variety of advanced communication techniques such as the internet, cellular, and satellite phones.
Oh, sorry.
Has incorporated its expertise with the operational background of intelligence experts and is proud to introduce its NiceTrack product line.
You know what? This is producty stuff. I'm going to show you that later because I'm not trying to sponsor any particular company, and it's exactly the opposite. I'm just trying to be really balanced and show you just what it is, what's out there, so you know. That's the only thing. Okay. I'm going to put on my microphone back. Okay, this is harder than I thought. Okay, so when we look at issues in LI, they're primarily legal, because the technical issues are much more clear than the legal morass that you need to travel. And what we need to remember is we're looking at evidence in court, ultimately. And there's a cute little quote from Rumpel, which is a British series. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the judge says, am I here to hear the truth? And he says, no, you're here to hear the evidence. So the point of this evidence, certain characteristics in court, needs to be admissible, which means there's a difference in terms of countries, what's allowed to be sent into court. It needs to be authentic. There should be an explicit link between the evidence and the individual. This is hard to do when you're talking about data. This is hard to actually tack it on to a specific person behind a laptop when you can't always verify that they're that entity. It has to be accurate. It has to be a reliable process that actually is used to capture the information. It has to tell a whole story, like beginning, middle, end. So that means you can't miss parts. You can't just get a couple of keywords and be able to tack this information over to a courtroom. And it has to ultimately be convincing to a jury. And this is where you have a sticking point. This is why really good lawyers on both sides can make you get a conviction or not. So that's the ultimate test. And the admissibility of surveillance evidence is, yeah, in the internet world, pretty hard because it's very virtual. You can't actually find criminals doing the act itself, which is a little Latin word. So basically, you cannot take this evidence and say, aha, here's a smoking gun, here we go, I got him. And juries are not made of technical people at all. They're made of normal laymen. And if we don't have a jury system, like in Europe, most countries don't have a jury system, but we do have our judges that are also incapable of making really technical decisions. So when they're confronted by lawyers like Jennifer Granick, for example, that can arguably demonstrate that it's very difficult to correlate the individual and the data, then you can get off, basically. Or, you know what I mean? The case for treating intercepted evidence as secondary and not primary is like done in Holland. So in Holland, basically they say, okay, we will consider this as not the first thing that will be used as primary evidence in a case to convict the actual individual. It'll just be like supplementary, and we know to handle it like as a copy of the original. So email, for example, is not like actually what he said, but it's a transcribed something that could be, you know, linked to the individual, but as supplementary stuff. So we know he killed his wife because there's blood stains on the carpet and his fingerprints all over the place. Ah, and we also have an email that he wired her life insurance funds to a secret bank account in Geneva. You know, stuff like that. Is that kind of clear? Okay. And specifically about internet services, well, we've defined it at access, and then services that go over the internet, so different protocol-oriented stuff. Okay, and what do we do about encrypted traffic? Well, encrypted traffic, like secure mail, HTTPS, VPNs, encrypted IP phones, it has a very specific context. If it's being actually applied by the ISP or the network operator, like a service provider, then that party is responsible for stripping the encryption off of the data and sending the data clear over to the law enforcement management facility. If it hasn't been provided by them, but actually done by the individual, so let's say that Adam is, you know, using PGP, if he's using PGP of a relatively good strength and you can't strip it, well, the agency has to deal with stripping it. That's what I wanted to say. So, what's a logical overview? Okay. Well, basically, it's relatively simple. This is just one type of setup. There's a lot of different types of interception. I'm going to also talk about that. So, this is actually a passive intercept approach. Or actually semi-active, I should say. Let's say you have a user, he has two different connections or several users connected over different access methods. He goes over the telco domain, which is not supposed to be intercepted. This is how it used to be done in the past. You just had a clip at the local sites of the telco domain, and you were able to get your traffic over that way. But that was really done purely by the law enforcement agency. They would just go there, get a warrant to be at the location. They didn't need to have it for a specific individual, and they would just get all the traffic off of a particular line or number. But now the way that it's being done is that there's a black box, in this picture it's a red box, and it's connected close to between the radius server and the outgoing router and the ISP domain, and let's say the mail server. So it's specifically protocol oriented. It can also be on this portion or this portion, like just before the internet router or just after the internet router. You can also have an additional entry point into this device. It captures all the traffic for a specific entity. I should make that really clear. So it doesn't just take all the traffic and chuck it over. It just captures that traffic and it gets filtered and it gets sent over. Well, basically what I want to say is there are three basic steps. It's copy, filter, and forward. So although this is connected to the production network, it should have no impact on that production network. So it should just be like using a hardware splitter to take all the traffic over. So if it's destined for one box, then it gets copied over to the interception box as well. And then all the traffic gets copied over. Then there's like a switch-based or software-based filter that filters the traffic for poll routers or someone else. And then it gets sent over to the law enforcement management facility, like the Secret Service, civilian police, and whomever. So this is lawful interception. That's the fundamental difference. Because when it's not lawful, you're not doing it for a specific person. You're not doing it with any legal basis. You don't have a warrant. I just want to point these things out because it relates later to something else we're going to talk about. Okay, so what are the challenges here? The challenges is to maintain transparency on that network. You do not want anyone to know on that network that that box exists. This is a bit difficult. And you don't want the user to notice that they're being tapped. That's not allowed. It's in the law that it's not allowed. And furthermore, you have to maintain the standard of communication currently available on that production network. So you don't want to make the interception device or devices slow down that network at all. Identifying the target and actually capturing all the radius traffic or just capturing all the user login and logoffs, that's quite difficult. So, for example, what could happen, what several devices under testing do fail to do is capture all the radius traffic. So in Carnivore, I think, was one of the things that Belden. Right, thank you. Steve Belden, when he testified before Congress about Carnivore, that was one of the issues that came up, because Carnivore basically started out tapping Paul and at some point in time missed a radius disconnect and then started tapping Adam and didn't know the difference. So all the data had to be chucked. It's not supposed to do that. So that's kind of clear. Okay, what also is quite missing in some of these implementations is an effective filtering switch. So the switch that actually is supposed to do the filtering cannot handle the traffic that it's getting and cannot chuck it away at the same rate. Switches aren't meant to chuck traffic. Firewalls are meant to chuck traffic. So the actual hardware implementation that's being used to satisfy the problem is just simply not adequate. So they're not fast enough, basically. And then finally, packet reassembly. A lot of the implementations also promise that, you know, they capture all the email traffic and then rebuild it into a nice, pretty little email. That doesn't always work. It should, but it doesn't. Software complexity, all the software that these guys are building is relatively complex. It has different subparts that should be not so bad, but because they're expected to do so many things, and I'll show you some of the other things that they're supposed to do, some of them promise emotion recognition, some of them promise keyword searches en masse, they promise a lot. But the more complex that they are and the more things that they promise, the buggier they tend to be. And finally, one of the challenges that remains is peering with the law enforcement management facility. Because if you're monitoring like 50 DSL connections and you are from several different operators and you only have one path back to the law enforcement management facility of a 2 meg line, well, good luck. But it's not going to work. Okay, so how did it start in the EU? First of all, it really started differently in the EU than anywhere else. So what the legal basis in the EU was the EU directive, and then later the Convention on Cybercrime that was done by the Council of Europe. There are two articles that specifically relate to interception, and it's Article 21, which talks about collecting traffic in real time, and Article 20, which talks about collecting traffic in real time, and 21, which actually talks about just content data. Because Article 20 is more referring to the administrative information, so logging and stuff like this, and then collecting that real time, just getting it forward, and then finally the actual content. And then it's supplemented by national laws and regulations, in which case it's different in every country around Europe as to how it's actually implemented because of the lack of a single standard across the EU. Technically speaking, it is absolutely not carnivore. It's not a device that's completely passive, can be turned on randomly by a law enforcement agency and just sits intimately on your network and you have no idea what it's doing. And in terms of standards, it's not CLIA-based. So the way that the warrant is initiated, in terms of the cooperation that the ISP or provider is expected to lend to the relevant organizations, that's also completely different. So legally and technically, it's not anything like what's available in the US. And in terms of standards, the IETF standpoint on wiretapping, which is that it won't be built into the protocol, is something that's also been quite strong in the EU. They really go into that, okay, well, we're not going to weaken general standards available on the internet by building in wiretapping into that. In terms of the actual solution requirements, there's only 2 points that I want to make with this. In the UK, there's an obligation for a permanent solution, but it's not really flexible. So there are mandates as to how you are supposed to provide a solution. Whereas in Holland, for example, you have to have a permanent solution, which means that it should always be available so that when you get an order, you should be able to fulfill that order. And it can be flexible. So you can solve the problem in any which way you would like. Contrast that with Germany, where it doesn't have to be permanent, so you can put it on and off, but it does have to be, or it can be flexible. So this is just a quick overview. It's in your book. There are some slides that are not in your book, but I can email you those. Oops, sorry. Just quickly over France. There's a national commission in France that goes over every single request for a wiretap, the CNCIS, and this is only because they were illegally tapping ministers and, you know, other people, and that was not considered friendly. So. And finally, in 2001, as a response to September 11th, they initiated the general security law. And it's basically that in the cases of terrorism or whatever, this board is not so important, and for any reason like terrorism, we can tap anybody whenever we want. So it's a carte blanche in France. In Germany, you have the G10 law, which is probably the most far-reaching law for tapping in the EU. I'm not even going to try to say this. The last time I was in Germany and tried to say this, everyone started giggling, and I think I said something really dirty. So, but the point is that the G10 law is also the name of the most popular product in Germany that provides interception. And if you really would like to look at the architecture, I have some pictures for you. And they also had the same response as France. In January 2002, they proposed a counterterrorism act, which is also a carte blanche to, for, you know, any kind of thing. Oh, it's terrorism. Oh, okay, it's terrorism. Yeah, sure, we'll give you this. So, this you can read later at your own thing, but basically in the UK there are two basic acts that provide for UK interception legislation. The one is the RIPA Act, and the other one is also response to September 11th, which is the Anti-Terrorism Crime and Security Act. In this quote, I have the head of MI5, which is the UK's Home Secretary, and he's basically saying, it's really, really tragic what happened in September 11th in the States, but you know, it's really clear now that you really need to tap people, huh? So it's actually a good thing. So basically, that's what he says. So read it at your leisure. The case in Holland is that basically Holland is, in terms of legally, and when I say at the forefront, I don't mean that it's extensive, although they have been reported to have the most wiretaps of anywhere in Europe, but perhaps it's also because they're just very, very honest, I think. Okay, Paul. Sorry. You can also talk to Paul, by the way. He also knows quite a bit about this stuff afterwards. But in terms of the forefronts, they have a great deal of legislation. They've covered all the bases pretty well in terms of Europe. And technically, they're very, very ready to intercept. So that's what I mean by at the forefront. There's a Telecommunication Act of 1998 that defined what the operator responsibilities were in terms of tapping. Then within the Dutch criminal book, or the criminal code book, or the code book of criminal proceedings, you have how an intercept request is started and handled. finally, you have the Special Investigation Powers Act, which was also a response to September 11th, and it basically streamlines the methods that different lawful agencies use to start a request, handle the data amongst each other, and deal with the different providers. There's a new, brand new, like spanking new proposal for law. It's called a wet voorstel, and basically, I don't know how many of you are Dutch. Are there any of you here that are Dutch? Have you ever heard of this wet voorstel? This is the amazing thing about this. It's really new, but it's already door to Tweede Kamer, so it's through the second house of parliament. Yes, and no one has said anything about it. And what it practically does is it provides a backdoor decree to start fishing expeditions. So without really any basis, like you have to have this crime and you have to have this and you need this, under a basis of a decree, they can just say, okay, well, we'd like some information. We can only give you partial information to start this entire thing, but we'll give you this partial information. We expect you to provide name, address, information, and additional information as it comes along. The other thing that it does is it asks the provider to supply information that's not normally available for them on their network. So if they're not normally capturing some traffic, because that's the previous thing, currently in the law what it says is you have to keep your billing data. The billing data that you currently have, you have to be able to provide that when requested. But this says, even if you don't keep certain logging information, even if you don't have particular types of, I'm not sure what, protocols being monitored, whatever, you have to be able to provide that should they be asked for by the government. This is new. And it can be done at any basis, at any time, which is quite scary, actually, which means you don't need any previous law. And this is scary because the rest of the laws here are quite nice. They cover, you know, they have checks and balances, they make sure that there's no abuse of power, etc. But this one, it's giving like a complete blank check for any detective in any investigation to ask for this kind of information. And it's really brand new. It's going to go through the first house, so it needs to be, you know, it's already past the second, it's going to go to the first, and then it will be law. But the point is that it's in the first house, they can only oppose it on the basis of a technical legal issue, like, oh, it contradicts the previously stated law. So that won't happen, so it will definitely go through. It passed very easily through the second house. So this is quite serious for Holland, actually. There's actually more new acronyms that I should have mentioned, but I'm only going to mention the two big ones, which is the National Interception Office, called the LIO. It started in operation at the end of last year, and there's also a central bureau for telecom interception, which is supposed to handle, like, it's a coordination point, basically. So you have a coordination point from the government, which is the LIO, and you have a coordination point for the operators, which is the SIOT. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the ETSI, which is the European Telecommunications and Standards Institute, and how they do interception. This is a little bit dry material, so if you have the need to ask any more interesting questions, just feel free. Okay. I'm just going to get through this. Basically, you have an internal interception function built into a network provider's domain. This interception function is defined by ETSI as having two types of communication. They have the information related to the intercept, the IRI traffic, and then you have the actual traffic, which is the content of the communication. These two fields are then sent over as IRI and content of communication. There's a mediation function. Then there's basically a network demarcation point about how this will flow through, and it's transferred over to the law enforcement agency through the means of these different HI stuff. And these are the really important acronyms because, The HI2 is the handover, so how you are supposed to, what it's going to look like, you know, where does it start, what are the different fields in the data, etc. That's the HI2, that's the intercept-related information, how you're going to send that over. And the HI3 is how you send over content of communication, how you actually send over that traffic. The HI1 is an administrative thing, so that's like when you want to turn on the warrant by the operator, that's the HI1 interface. So you turn it on, there's a little administration function, so like a GUI where you have to put in the warrant information, the encryption keys, etc., and then you start the intercept, then you send it off, the ways of these two things. Etsy defined this so that you have a way of a same language, so to speak, between the operator and the government. So they both know what kind of stuff they need and how, so they could start discussing it. I'm going to show you more in just a second. It's pretty easy, actually. So they have this nice little quote, which you can also read later, but they just want to enable interoperability. That's why they focus on the HI stuff. They just want to focus on that handover protocol. It used to be called different things, and currently now, what was supposed to have happened is in April of this year, they were supposed to have come out with a technical specification about how to conduct the handover. They're still working on it. They're taking nice trips everywhere around Europe, but they're still working on it. So what they've also done is they've split it up. So they've made their work different. They've split it up into making specifically details for internet access, which like is talking about radios, DHCP, etc. How do we actually deal with the access traffic? And then they have another one protocol specific for email. So later it could be expected that they have different protocol specific stuff for the actual content that's traveling. So they've just defined, okay, well, here's your access methodology, how we know the users on the network, and then we're going to have a different one specifying what he's doing on that network. Eventually there could be other stuff happening like new standards for voice over IP, for PP tunneling, that's a proposal that's coming up. They might integrate IPv6 into the access detail one, which is DTSLI 0005. And currently, all of this work is still in progress, which was not supposed to be the case a couple of months ago. They were supposed to be totally done. But when they can go to Malaga and Nice to hold their meetings and everybody flies over, hey, I would keep meeting too. There's one good document. It's the Etsy TR 944, which is the issues. So if you want to kind of see what's going to be expected, you can check out that document, and it'll give you a good flow through. What's in that document is it defines who's responsible for intercepting, which is nice, because then you know if it's going to be the ISP or the access provider. It has a different model for defining service level and network level division about what layer of the OS model you're actually intercepting on. It has different things about implementation architecture, security aspects, and finally, content of communication delivery. So check it out. The TIIT is the technical intercept. Sorry, the the technical interception of IP traffic. I always forget these acronyms. It started out with a working group for lawful interception, which was a group that was meeting to discuss how we're going to approach a technical document. And the players were the ISPs, the operator, like the different telcos, and the government. And the end result was a version 1.0, which you can get at www.opentap.nl. I'll have some URLs for you later. .org, sorry. His website. And you can have a lot of other good information there, too. The deadline was supposed to be full IP and email tap by 2002. For the most part, that's been realized. And basically, what was supposed to happen was there was this group that was created of all the ISPs, and it was called NLIP. So it was just a group of the different operators of the ISPs. And what they were initially intending to do was to form a unified method of thinking about interception. So they were going to get together and say, aha, this is how we will approach the problem. This will present us with a financially attractive method of looking at operators, and also a single way to deal with the government. Unfortunately, this group did not work. So as a result, there was never a single homogeneous way to deal with the government. And there was never a single way to look at all the vendors and have an attractive way to intercept your traffic locally. Costs have become an issue as a result. A lot of the smaller ISPs simply cannot afford to implement the directive that the government has imposed on them. So basically, there was a very good example from Zolnet, which was a smaller ISP, saying, if we do implement it, we will be bankrupt because we won't be able to buy this commercial solution from the provider and keep running our business. And if we don't implement it, we will be put out of business. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And this is really a challenge. It has become a challenge in Holland for all of the ISPs. Okay, so what is the TIIT? It has the same stuff like what we talked about the handover interface for Etsy. It defines the user requirements for transports, so what the user, which is eventually the law enforcement agency, what they expect to get from the ISPs. And then it defines a general architecture. Okay, how do we look at this intercept-related information? How do we look at this content of communication? And then finally, it defines like big data structures and stuff. So it actually does the same work that we expected Etsy to do, but then for Holland. And all combined. So the different things that were going to be separated per protocol, et cetera, they are just packed into one nice document. Okay, so let's look at what they actually do. Here we go. We have a law enforcement agency. They have a warrant. They send this warrant over to a LI warrant administration desk. This administration desk is coordinated to know, okay, well, I have a user. I need to send it to this ISP instead of that one. And then they send it off to the relevant ISP. The ISP starts the details of this LI order, which should be a few things, into a management box. It gets on through the flow of the ISP, goes over the internet, and gets into the law enforcement agency. If we look at it in a little more detail, we're going to see that this is comprised, this ISP part, of three different types of little functions. So the first function is the S1. The S1 is the interception box. It is the black box that's doing the actual interception. So what it does is it takes the traffic, it takes a timestamp over that target packets, it generates a SHA hash for the first 64 packets that it receives, it encrypts it with a key that's only meant for that intercept. So every single intercept is encrypted with a different key. There's a lot of good reasons for this. One of them is so you don't mix up, you know, the tap that I have done for Paul with the tap that I've done for Adam. The other reason is, let's say I am the FBI and I want to tap someone. Ooh, shouldn't tap the microphone. If I am the FBI and I want to tap the CIA, I don't want them to know. So what I will do is encrypt the traffic specifically for myself with a different key, and when it comes over to the same Elliott interface, so the same law enforcement agency interface, it'll just go to me. Is that clear? Questions? Okay. And then it sends it off to the S2. So what we do is we're copying here, we're copying all the traffic from the ISP. Then we're forwarding it over to the filter box. So here you can imagine that it gets filtered for the specific entity. And what the S2 will do is collect it, distribute the target packets randomly over the T1s, which is the government agencies, because you can have more than one. So let's say this is a government box, that's a government box, and that's a government box, but they belong to three different groups. And then it uses X509 certificates. That's just something you should know. Okay. The S3 is not actually defined in the TIIT, but it's a functional operation that's actually used, and it's the GUI. It's just the GUI. So it starts the intercept, it collects the billing data, because we have this very nice system, so that this is a bit of a dichotomy. It's a fundamental dilemma, actually. It's a case of conflict of interest. The ISP gets paid per intercept. So the more intercepts it does, the more money it gets from the government. Does anybody see the problem? Okay, so what happens is that they have to do an initial investment to get the stuff, you know, to get their boxes running and to be able to say that they can intercept, and then per intercept that they actually do on their users on their network, they can negotiate a fee with the government about how much money they get back. So, okay, so what happens on the T1 side? On the government side, you have the T1s that are just sitting there randomly collecting the traffic. Then they transfer this traffic to the real agency. So this is really then the box for the FBI. This is really the box for the CIA. And in Europe, it would be different European local agencies. And the T2s then decrypt those packets. It checks the integrity, and they can use it for the investigation. Okay. So interception suppliers and discussion of techniques. Now it's time for another video. So let's just check out the video again.
Advanced communication techniques such as the internet, cellular, and satellite phones. NICE has incorporated Incorporated is expertise with the operational background of intelligence experts and is proud to introduce its Nice Track product line. Nice Track complies with the international standards for lawful interception, such as the European ETSI, the American Kalea, and various proprietary protocols. In addition, Nice Track features a non-intrusive passive mode for interception of network trunks. Nice Track may be configured in various ways, from a small-scale local system up to a full-scale nationwide system with central and remote sites. The technical concept behind Nice Track includes various redundancy options such as RAID 5 mirroring and hot swappable devices for the system's components, providing smooth and uninterrupted operation around the clock. An intuitive, user-friendly command and control interface enables the system administrator to easily monitor the technical status and operational workflow of the system. Special attention has been given to assure that the system's integrity is not compromised. This is achieved by using login IDs, passwords, and by configuring different user profiles, each with a detailed set of permissions according to each user's clearance.
Do you see that?
Electronic authentication, use of proprietary formats, and advanced auditing tools are also a part of Nice Track's comprehensive security concept.
Oh, this is funny. We're just gonna watch this because I think it's so cute, but...
In some cases, as in the case you are about to see, the plot begins when a court issues a warrant allowing partial or full monitoring of a suspect's telecommunication devices. This is done after the law enforcement agency is tipped off about possible subversive or criminal activities of a certain suspect.
Yeah. Hello, viewers. This is Maverick. Very important. Well, send me your instructions to my machine. You know where it's...
Yeah, I remember. Tomorrow, 10 o'clock, according to my VIP.
Of course. I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, bye. Yeah.
Voice identification confirmed.
Nice Track allows real-time and offline monitoring. When a suspect uses his phone, he is under constant surveillance. A system operator can monitor his activity and compose synopses or transcriptions of his telephone calls. A unique system feature, the Executive Connect, allows field agents and case officers to be notified about relevant information in real time, anytime, anywhere. The Executive Connect is a powerful operational tool for conducting special activities such as covert surveillance. Nice Track allows monitoring of a wide range of communications protocols, including Group 3 and various non-standard fax protocols. As the use of cellular technology is constantly widening, law enforcement agencies and security organizations genuinely need to effectively monitor this communication medium. Nice Track fully answers this requirement. In addition, the system offers usage of GIS data in order to conduct real-time or offline surveillance of a target's movements. This way, authorities may have a wider intelligence outlook and gain better insight into a target's behavior pattern. Hostile elements extensively use computer communication for their purposes. Nice Track offers a unique and comprehensive solution for monitoring various sorts of computer communications, such as emails, voice over IP, chat, and instant messaging.
Voice
Okay. So, but the, I think you will notice that the one that they had about the internet cafe is highly unrealistic. You cannot, I mean, unless you can immediately locate them at the internet cafe, send it forward, try to find, or directly tap the line the old-fashioned way, you won't be able to tap his traffic because there's just too many variables. So that was unclear, but the rest of it, I've seen the stuff, they've got it, at least they claim to have it. I've never seen it really on a production network working. But this is from the government point of view. So this is not from the operator point of view. I have to go backwards, don't I? I just did the wrong thing. Okay, but what I wanted to say was, again, that was a video that was intended for government officials like, you know, the FBI, the CIA, et cetera, those, or national agencies that do intercepts. So they're the buyers, and they're the ones that normally have to look at that. Very silly. How did I do this? Any questions about that video? Yeah.
Maybe I can copy that video.
No. No, I have permission to show it. I don't have permission to distribute it. So I can ask, but I can't make any promises. But I mean, you know. Yeah, Jeff is whistling. All right, come on, really, like, you know, be responsible. You guys want more videos, right? So I have to keep my sources happy. So, the soundtrack, yeah, very nice. Sounded like, okay, well, shouldn't say anything. No, I'm going to talk about the company in just 1 second, actually. I'm just trying to get the... Okay, because what we're going to talk about now is, come on, yeah.
They talked about, in this ad video, they talked about GPS data, and collect GPS data. Has that to do with the new mobile network, with UMTS? Because in a lot of UMTS telephones, there is a GPS module.
It's really funny, actually, because this particular product uses Magellan. They use a commercial map-finding product to determine the coordinates of the interception party. And what you noticed about Executive Connect, I don't know if you got that from the video, but basically the police officer who is in the trench coat, you know, traditional, yeah, for spies, I suppose, but who was in the trench coat following the criminal around, he was getting all of the same conversation that the other guy was getting and finding out the location, all supposedly from the product. You know, I don't know. And I want to say this again just to make sure it's 100% clear. I'm not promoting this product. I don't know enough about it. I got the material. I'm happy to show it to you, but, you know, they're just another supplier. Okay. And this is what they claim to be able to do. So, the actual implementations, there are some market leaders. The market leader right now is Verint Communications, and they're formally called Converse Infosys. I don't know how many of you have heard of them. Has anyone not heard of them? Okay, all right. They are an Israeli company. I'm going to talk about them. ABC was also formerly called SSA. There are allegations that the reason that they changed the name is immediately when they get bad publicity, they change their name around so that, you know, people will forget. Accuris is a company out of Ireland. Pine is used in the Netherlands by one of the largest telco providers. Nice is the thing that you just saw. There's also Axicom, Digibox. There's also a whole bunch more, and there's also a lot of local companies that will build their own set of stuff because they use different standard things and they make their own interception product. Also, what you should know is that there are different vendors, like hardware vendors, Siemens, Alcatel, Cisco, Nortel, Nokia. They all build interception equipment either on top of or sometimes integrated to their product line. There were recent allegations about Cisco. Paul also has the articles, I think, on his website, which I will show you at the end of the thing, which you can also read those articles on. But you have to remember that at a certain layer, you should be able to turn those interception functions off as an operator. They're not standardly built in. And you, ultimately, they have no choice. So it's the same issue that you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Okay, what are the different kinds of implementation techniques? We have active implementation, which means direct, local, on the box, sitting there, you know, integrated into the protocol interception. So we're talking about a blind copy forward, or just on the mail server, you have everything just copying the mails directly over from a particular target. You have semi-active interception, which means that you're just interacting with the radio server to get the radius connect and disconnect. Then you actually capture and filter that traffic for that particular IP address of that target. And then we have passive interception, which is no interaction whatsoever from the ISP. The government has a black box. They go click when they feel like it and clack when they, you know, want to turn it off. And this is a carnivore-like method, is passive. The majority of the following providers I'm going to tell you, they offer active and semi-active implementations. However, a lot of them also claim, you know, for certain countries to be able to do the fully passive method. The block is just integrated into the ISPs or providers network, and the government has a remote management interface that turns it on at will. Okay. So, Converse. They're based out of Israel. If you want to read the allegations about them, you can find them on the internet. Just look up, you know, right now on the Black Hat Wireless Network, look up Fox News, Converse, FRAC 5813 has a little article about it. It's all over the place. There's also different things in Holland that have also been said about Converse, because Converse is being used by the Dutch government in their side. Remember the T1 side? That's Converse in Holland. So, or variant, I should say. I shouldn't say Converse. They're being used right now. And they're also used extensively internationally. They're using Kalia, and they're supporting Etsy. They have different hardware relationships. Like, they're saying they use a top layer switch. But there are some things that I should tell you. There are allegations about them, and the allegations are as follows. Basically, they said about Verint, that Verint was tapping the FBI. Have any of you heard this already? Yeah? Okay. They said they were tapping the FBI, that there was basically a direct line from the equipment that was standing in the United States all the way back to Israel. That was the first allegation. The second allegation was, no. It's not just tapping the FBI. In Holland specifically, it was about Israeli engineers that were coming here with Hebrew keyboards and tapes and doing all the maintenance on the local sites. And, you know, the local Dutch guys having no idea what they were doing. But because they do have a maintenance contract, and because the software is so complex, and the local Dutch authorities could never, fully manage it themselves, that was the second allegation. And I'm saying these words really carefully. Allegations, rumors, okay? And there are also responses. The response was, I'm just going to give you their response. They claim, because those are claims, and none of this is proof in either way, they claim that, no, you know, we would never be able to have such a line with such a particular agency without them finding out about it. Of course we use local staff. Of course we would never copy intercepts. Of course we don't have any passive lines, or we're not dumping data onto our laptops when we come in and do our maintenance. That's their thing. And if they're being used so extensively by so many different agencies, how could they bear the smirch of such an accusation? So there are a lot of things saying, hey, maybe it's just a different vendor who's trying to get in on their particular interception action. There's also an allegation, which is actually more than an allegation, it's partially true. They receive funding from Israel. They receive funding for R&D. They have a budget from the Israeli government. So the Ministry of Industry and Trade gives them a portion of R&D grants. But the issue with that is a lot of companies get R&D grants. So I don't know how true that is either. I know that, well, I have a list, and US Robotics, Siemens, NICE, which is the other vendor that you saw, they also get funding. So God knows what it's for, but they're getting some of it, and to what portion it represents of their actual operating budget or their R&D budget, I also don't know. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, there's a lot of information out there. You should be, it's these great words I heard, proleptic and apoletic. You should be critical and, you know, seeing into what's expected here. Why are they saying this? For what purpose are they saying it? So just, yeah, use your own best thinking. Nice. It's used in Belgium as the government side of the Belgian operation, which is brand new, actually. It just got into operations recently. They're doing testing now with the different ISPs. What you should know, oh my God, my time is up, isn't it? Almost. Yes. Okay, I'm just going to hurry, because I'm like Richard. I love to talk. Okay, it is proprietary. It's implemented for Etsy. It's big bag boxes. It featured, by the way, I should also say this, there's black boxes all over the place here. They use partial use of proprietary hardware. Nice definitely uses fully proprietary hardware. They claim to be able to do all the stuff. You guys saw the video. It runs on Windows NT. I don't know how that makes you feel. Right now they have a standalone solution, which is later going to be integrated, so you're supposed to be able to do everything with this one solution. ADC and SS8. They're also using fully proprietary hardware. SS8 is known for large bandwidth, so satellite connections, that's what they're used for. They claim to work under both the American model and the European model. They're also using a top-layer switch. You should know about these hardware vendors because it means a lot about what their actual implementation is. Accurus, they have certain limitations. From their first release, they were able to do 50 concurrent taps. That's a severe limitation to governments that sometimes have many more, you know, hundreds of taps running. The solution is independent of switch type, which was a severe limitation when we talked about the technical limitations in like slide 3 or something. This set, they claim not to be, you know, suffering from that. There are different financial considerations. They also claim to offer a gigabit solution, and they also claim to support Kalia and Etsy. Finally, it's all about the money. It's always all about the money. So, it's all about the money. They can use, no one's getting my jokes. This is very sad. And I'm singing on stage. Okay, the solutions can cost anywhere between 100,000 to 700,000 euros for the ISP. How many ISPs have like 700,000 spare change in their pockets to spend on these kinds of solutions, especially not the smaller ones? The UK government expected to spend 46 billion over the next 5 years, and then they reduced that to say, no, just 27 billion. Oops. You know, the way that they divide the cost is you have capital expenditure, which is the initial expenditure to get the product, and then you have operational expenditure, which is the stuff that it costs to maintain and run it over time. The CapEx, in the majority of the European countries, the way that the division has been done is the ISP bears the burden of getting it, and the government bears the burden of maintaining it. This is what we talked about, conflict of interest. The ISP gets paid for running the product. Yeah? Not for buying it, but for running it. So the more money, they can actually get the cost of the product back, and maybe even make a handy profit over the end of the day, depending on how many taps they do. There are penalties for non-compliance. In Holland, it's quite strict. We go fines, we go civil charges, and we even go to arresting, house arresting, the CEO of the ISP. How many CEOs? Okay, that's pretty clear. The cooperation between the ISPs to choose the single tool, which I talked about with the NOIP, that's not going to happen anytime soon. They're too different in terms of what kind of technology they want to use, vendor favoritism, etc. So, unfortunately, this would have been the financial attractive method to do, but it's not going to happen. Okay, so conclusions for law enforcement. Any law enforcement? No? Okay, very wise. This is just advice for you, so you can read it later. Future developments and issues. As the EU is getting bigger, as we're taking on more Eastern European countries, there are stipulations that are done by Europol saying you have to be able to tap if you want to join the EU. So countries that are in the first ring, like the Czech Republic, Poland, etc., they have to be able to tap if they want to get on board. Otherwise, don't bother joining. And that's a Europol stipulation. So in addition to the legal and economic and other harmonization that's required, this is also required. There's also decisions that are being made right now about data retention. How long do we hold on to our data? And what kind of data do we hold on to? So do we just hold on to the billing data, the IRI data, or do we keep content of communications for 12 months? We're talking about lots of money for providers that offer like storage. So if you have any money to invest in stocks before this decision comes out, do it. And we're also talking about borderless capabilities when we're talking about lawful interception. We are no longer going to have like just being able to tap a user in Holland. We're going to be able to have eventually an Infopol organization, that's a European police basically, that can tap them across all of Europe. And the ISP role will get smaller and smaller and smaller, or larger and larger and larger, depending on how these decisions go. And how much requirements is needed for a passive or an active approach in terms of the interception. Okay, quantum cryptography. How many people here know about it? Okay, so I'm not going to go into it. But this has also impact on how we see interception, because it doesn't mean you're stopping interception, but you can know between two finite points over a particular distance that you are being intercepted. That will impact the rest of the picture. And there's also challenges. ISPs, people who provide internet services, are supposed to be able to tap those services as well. So when you're talking about wireless LANs, they could technically be considered a provider of those kinds of services. So are you supposed to be able to tap your own wireless LAN if some other random user is using it? These are weird, fuzzy, legal places. And what's going to happen eventually to the future of privacy? That's also quite an issue. I have some websites for you. It's also in your book, so check those out, especially the first one. And I have some questions for you. If you don't have questions for me, check these out. Does LI deliver actual value to law enforcement? Does it actually help them protect the public more? What do you think? What about open source interception tools, so that you have more black boxes and you have actually secure tools that are only doing what they're supposed to do, not more? Will there be a return of something like the Clipper chip that actually captures, you know, traffic and can decrypt it on command? And like, will there be eventually mandated key escrow of all the ISP encryption keys, or just no encryption anymore? What kind of oversights will be built into the system, or should be built into the system, to prevent abuse? For example, when we were talking about capturing data and making sure it wasn't being abused, what about an independent facility that was also suggested by one of my friends, Paul Vaters, to just store the hashes of the intercepts? That would be a brilliant idea. Stuff like that. So, any questions? Answers? Yes?
Just quickly, I know this is different. You're talking obviously on the criminal side, but on the civil side, could you just give a really brief overview? Because I know the UK law with respect to, if I want to monitor a particular employee of an organisation that I control, under Holland, I know because of Holland's privacy laws, what I don't want to do is monitor an employee and then find out the data I gather is then non-admissible in, say, an industrial tribunal or whatever the equivalent is here. But what are the differences, really? I mean, what can I do, what can I not do?
That differs per country, and
to Holland, do you know on the Dutch side?
Well, actually, Holland, in terms of privacy from a corporate perspective, is quite good, but I'm not an expert on this, so what I would... What, sorry?
Or bad, depending on which side.
Yeah. But what I would like to do, if you don't mind, is get back to you on that over email, because then I can ask some people who really would know that much better than I would for the civil side, because I just know more about this particular side. Any other questions? Any answers for me? No? Okay. Well, thank you very much.